information is free.
The law? Of course.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
The law? Of course.
The country.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, made no difference. The cop police would get him just the same.
Whether he went on with the diary or whether he did not go on with the diary made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to episode 100 of Media Monarchy. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com. From Alex in Germany to Zach in Portland, I want to thank each and every one of you guys who support and help spread the word about the site and the show. This week, I'm honored and excited to have Clyde Lewis of the Ground Zero Lounge in studio for you. We're going to talk about probably everything from JFK to 9/11, the Obamasiah, media memes, and predictive programming. It's going to be amazing. 100th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, my friends. I'm glad you're here. And yes, it's the future.
Repent, repent, repent. I wonder.
That's a fucking joke, right?
That's not a fucking joke, my friends. It's episode 100 of MediaMonarchy.com. That was, of course, Leonard Cohen, the future. And it is the future, and we're there, and we're in it. So, like I said, I'm excited. We have a guest in studio, and we're going to get to Clyde Lewis here in just a second. But let me take care of the business. My name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of MediaMonarchy.com, coming to you live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org. Sunday nights at 7 Eastern Time on the Revere Radio Network, revereradionetwork.com, and blasting out LPFM style, pirate style, KVFR in Boulder, and Ground Zero Radio in Atlanta. And you can, of course, hit me up, FaceSpace, YouTube, Yahoo, IM, Skype, all with Media Monarchy as your keyword. And, of course, iTunes, radioforall.net, and archive.org are the places you can get the podcast. And I, again, thank you so much. The downloads have been increasing week by week by week. We're almost into the 200 range. So, again, I love you. Thank you. Redouble your efforts. Send it out to somebody, and we'll keep spreading the word. Now, my friends, his bio is extensive, and we're not going to go all the way through it, but my man Clyde Lewis, currently of the Ground Zero Lounge here in Portland, Oregon, Monday nights at Dante's. He's a radio host, producer, writer, actor, researcher, activist, all those things and more. He's been on everything from CNN to Penn & Teller's bullshit, interviewed everybody from Alex Jones to Adam West, and involved in everything from the dark side of the rainbow to the Toxic Avenger. Yes, my friends, it's Clyde Lewis. Thanks for coming on, brother.
You know, I just want to say that the intro and just being a part of the show is fantastic. I'm enjoying myself. Hearing Leonard Cohen puts you in the mood. It's kind of a nice,
absolutely
nice touch. I like that. So,
and we were talking off mic before the show that things like pump up the volume had a huge effect.
Oh, yeah,
on me. So.
Yeah. And it, you know, it is funny how shows like that, you know, keep that genre alive of that type of intro and that type of feeling, because you just can't capture that anywhere else. It's radio of the future. It's radio that we all want to be a part of. And I did that with Ground Zero back in 1995, and still trying to continue it now with Ground Zero Lounge, Ground Zero Continuum. Every aspect of Ground Zero that I do, it's just I try to implement that too. So
let's give folks a little bit of a background. If you want to give just kind of a brief bio.
Back in 1995 on April Fool's Day, I decided I wanted to do a sci-fi radio show, sort of a fun little sci-fi conspiracy theory type show, and I created Cult Radio back in 1995 in a place called KCNR, which was a CNN affiliate. I worked for CNN for a little while as a Western State representative, did a lot of reporting for them. Actually had to fake a story for CNN, and when I started faking stories for CNN, I realized,
something's
the
up.
The news sucks, and it's fake, so why don't I fake the news a little bit? So I decided I'd fake the news and talk about the things my dad used to talk about when we go to the barbershop, anything from jackalopes to Bigfoot. And it was kind of a a nice way of me winking and nudging people and saying, oh, this is all crap, but then...
So it started a little tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah, it was all tongue-in-cheek at first, until one day I had some guy, a prospector, come by with a picture. I actually got an insurance company decided they would pay $10 million for an insurance premium of $500 if I could prove UFOs existed and somebody brought a UFO to the radio station. Well, a guy didn't bring a UFO, but he brought an alien picture, or an alleged alien picture, that I put up on my website, and some man in black showed up and told me to take it down. I told him, no, I'm not going to take it down. I mean, this is a free country. I can speak my mind. Don't give me any crap. I'm not going to, Well, about a week or so later, maybe less, I don't know, got in my car, and it blew up. And then I realized that this is the real thing, and it's the real deal, and I wanted to find out more. There's so many other things, too. Like, I've had so many other experiences that have been synchronistic, where my life is, where I've manifested my life, where I've said, okay, I will this to happen, it happens, and I put myself into places where synchronicity always happens. Mm-hmm. I used to be called the king of synchronicity because I used to do a show called In the Pink, where I synchronized Pink Floyd music to movies and to other, like Led Zeppelin and stuff, and did the Dark Side of the Rainbow.
Do you claim credit or blame for
it? You know what I do is I kind of half-ass do it. The reason why I do it is because I talked with Alan Parsons. I interviewed Alan Parsons at one time, and he once told me, he says, you're fucking daft, he said to me. He says, you know, you have too much time on your hands, Clyde. What the fuck? You know, he's like going off of me, and I'm thinking, you know, yeah. So I'm not going to really come out and admit it, but I did admit it on Jeff Katz's show, WRKO in Boston, and it was about that time when it was about 1995, 96, they did a big article about me in Radio and Records, and I said that I did it. I said I was the one that did it, and then two DJs in Boston, they went and they did this big thing, and the Boston Globe did the story, and immediately I was off the hook. You know, no one could come after me, but I know the names and the people that were involved. Barry Mall was one of them. Another guy from Kansas City, Missouri. His name was Mike Beck, who helped me out with this. And then, of course, there was this woman that I used to get stoned with in her cabin, and we'd like sit there and play with Pink Floyd. Her name was Kat Savage, and she was another one that worked with us. So if they ever want names, places, faces, and dates, I can tell them exactly what it happened, how it happened, and why it happened.
All right.
It was mostly us being high.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's how it goes.
So starting in Utah.
Yeah.
And then ultimately landing here about...
Yeah.
10 years ago in Portland?
Yeah, 1999. I it was March of 2000 when Ground Zero became a national talk show with the NBG Radio Network. In fact, just up the street from where we're at right now. They offered me a show. We broke out in Chicago, Illinois. Mm. First time, you know, Ground Zero gets national. We break out in Chicago, and that's the number three market. We were very proud of that. We were in Salt Lake City still on K-Bear 101, did the show there. Pulled a 50 share, which means that half the audience, 11.2 surveyed, we're listening, 11.2 million surveyed, were actually listening to us. And Ground Zero was just like, you know, everywhere. I'd say we were number two, number three compared to our Bell and people like Jeff Renz and others. And of course, Jeff Renz now does his web stuff, and I'm doing web stuff. But we were doing really well, and I was on Sightings and Strange Universe, and I was kind of like I'm the second one you go to, you know, if you needed to have any opinions on the paranormal. They went to Art Bell first, me second, Jeff Renz third, or either way, either or.
So I didn't know it at the time, but the first time I guess I ever saw you was on the Penn and Teller bullshit episode about conspiracy theories.
Exactly.
Interestingly enough, my roommate had some of them on DVD at the time. This is a few years ago.
Yeah.
I was already on my own getting into 9/11 research.
Sure.
That's basically what turned me on to this world. But it was that episode that actually turned me off from watching Penn and Teller.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw all the sort of straw man limited hangout arguments.
Oh, I know. And you know what's really sad about that is that when I agreed to do the Penn and Teller show, I told them, I said, I will do your show as long as you don't make me out to look like a dork. And they did well. I don't think I look bad. In fact, what's really funny is if you go online and you see that Penn and Teller episode on YouTube, they cut me out. And I think the reason why they cut me out is because I'm too intelligent for them to handle. Uh-huh. They put all these straw men, as you say, the one that got in the chicken suit and started doing that.
Exactly.
You know, what a moron. And
so
the only person I would have on my show was Jim Mars, and he's an intelligent guy.
Absolutely.
Now, I talked with Jim Mars, and then, of course, Phil Plait, who's an asshole. He was the guy that was trying to debunk everything. He's the guy with the glasses. I recommended that he do the show. I told the Penn and Teller people, get Phil Plait on there, because Phil Plait is the best skeptic ever, because he's an asshole.
And he's a perfect spokesman for it.
And so, you know, when you have a large, gaping, sucking asshole like Phil Plait, and I'm saying that over and over again, so Phil Plait's cocksuckers will get on there and go, oh, by the way, Clyde said bad things about you.
Again.
Good thing, Phil. You had your head so far up Randy's ass, you now run his kingdom. Good for you. I hope you're happy. So anyway, I mean, I love Phil Plait, but he's a dick.
So it was that kind of limited hangout, straw man argument that really turned me off to it, because at that point, I had done my own research about 9/11 and JFK.
And they look like it, and you know, just some, what really pissed me off about the Penn and Teller show was that they figured that some fireman shuffling his feet on a New York street will gather enough sympathy to tell you, it wasn't an inside job.
Absolutely.
What about all those heroes? Yeah, screw that. Just because
exactly.
you're shuffling down the street, you know, wanting a handout doesn't mean that 9/11 was not an inside job.
And they do the shooting with the watermelon.
Yeah, and
Oswald
did you notice that it took them 11 minutes to set up the shot? And then they were saying, oh, we could have popped it off in 3 seconds.
Uh-huh.
No, you didn't. 11 minutes. You know, it took you 11 minutes to set up the shot. He was moving. And yeah, it was just really lame.
So that's actually good to mention, because as we're speaking right now, it's November 21st.
Yes.
Tomorrow being the 45th anniversary of the High Noon Texas death of JFK.
JFK.
So, like I just said, 9/11 was basically my awakening.
Right.
And, of course, then immediately backtracked to 9/11. The two are amazingly parallel.
Well, and amazingly enough, even though we're going to talk about JFK in this segment, my awakening was Princess Diana.
97.
That was 97, because I was on a plane coming back from Las Vegas. It was a loser cruise because I had lost my ass in Vegas. And I was trying to get over the fact that I was drinking vodka and eating bad hot dogs. But hearing that Princess Diana died just really, you know, and I had some guys sitting next to me saying, oh, they finally killed her, I guess. You know, this British accent. They go, what do you mean they finally killed her? Says, oh, the royal family's been wanting to kill Diana for the longest time, and you can find out that it was a blah, blah, blah. I'm like, this is like JFK. And so I went.
Yeah, that was your... Who was he in the plane with? Well, it's Walter Matthau but it's Long.
It was my deep throat on the plane, basically saying to me, yes, there is a lot of evidence to compel you, but a lot of evidence that won't dissuade you. You know, and it was kind of like that meeting. And, you know, the guy was kind of like a mysterious British-speaking guy, kind of like Sean Connery, you know, pull my finger, money, penny. And you know, it was really cool.
But spoke so simply about it. It's like, well,
yeah, matter of fact.
They finally did it.
Where the hell is my head? You know, still up the ass of some alien somewhere at Roswell. I got to pull my head out for a moment and figure out what the hell's going on with Princess Diana. And so, but it was like the JFK thing. I mean, for the longest time, my father, you know, talked about JFK, and I got to a point where, you know, I really haven't done an in-depth JFK show because there are so many conspiracy theories surrounding JFK that, you know, you cannot... I don't think you can ever figure out what really happened, but you can always look at who was behind the scenes making the puppets do their job. And Penn and Teller can be worked into this, because the Penn and Teller show, when they came and they interviewed me, there was a producer, and we were in a limo, and he had the camera rolling on me while we were in the limo, and he said, so who killed JFK? I looked at him and I said, turn off the cameras. I'm not going to tell you, because what I'm about to tell you, you know, I don't want the national media to hear it. Now, I'm not an idiot. I know when cameras are on, and I said, red light's off. Don't run the camera while I'm telling you to take the camera off, because I don't want this to end up on a national show. I'll talk about it on my shows. I'll talk about it with other people in other shows, but I'm not going to talk about it on national TV. And he says, okay, so who do you think killed JFK? And I said, who do you think had the most motive? George Herbert Walker Bush did. And that he was probably the mastermind behind the whole thing. He had all the power to do so. J. Edgar Hoover was looking into him being in Texas at the time.
Sent a memo to him.
Yeah. In fact, he trained Lee Harvey Oswald, allegedly, or he worked with Lee Harvey Oswald, you know, because, you know, Daddy Bush is pretty much the toughest cookie in Washington. And I can tell you that once he's gone, there's going to be a lot of people in a panic in Washington, because the good old boy network is slowly dying off. And all these good old boys that are being put in these positions are literally the architects of where we are now. JFK was the, I guess you could say, the sacrificial lamb, if you will. 9/11 was the cremation of care. We don't know what's next, but when you're looking at a guy who, you know, George H.W. Bush, what, he lost a lot with Zapata oil, the whole situation with the Bay of Pigs, you know, I'm sure that this was more or less, you know, you hire the mob to do whatever it is you need to have done. And you take a look at all the people that were put into power after JFK. Nixon, who was, you know, of course, a tool of the mob. You have Gerald Ford, who replaced him. Gerald Ford on the Warren Commission. I mean, it all goes back to
Alan Dulles on the Warren Commission, fired by Kennedy.
Yeah,
previously.
Sure. And I mean, you look at all that and you say to yourself, what a, you know, people like Nick Begich Sr., who said that the magic bullet theory was bogus, bullshit.
And well, tell us, and we've mentioned this a little bit recently, tell us who Nick Begich Sr. it was.
Nick Begich Sr. is Nick Begich Jr.'s father, but Nick Begich Sr. was from Alaska, and he was with
Hale Boggs,
who is well-known as well. And what had happened is that they were in an airplane flying over Alaska, and the airplane crashed. Now, a lot of people don't know this, but do you know who drove these gentlemen to the airport and put them on the plane?
No, I do not.
A man by the name of William Jefferson Clinton drove these men to the airport that night.
The one and only?
The one and only William Jefferson Clinton.
And that, I believe, was in October 1972. It was basically an October surprise.
Exactly.
He was well stoned.
Right.
His seat was lost. Power shifted in Congress.
So we take a look at the names that keep popping up. I mean, if you were to go back and actually take a name and play word association on Google, you can pretty much find out who's pulling the strings and who's been pulling the strings from the very beginning, from Kennedy on down. Mm-hmm.
And that actually, that reminds me, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of a guy named Mark Lombardi.
Yes.
Global networks, global connections, I believe, is some of the names of some of his pieces. But, of course, he killed himself after putting all this work together that basically connected
people like Danny Casolaro and the octopus conspiracies.
Do you know where
Jim Keith and those people?
Absolutely. Do you know where Danny Casolaro was found dead?
Well, in a bathtub, but where?
In Martinsburg, West Virginia, which is actually, we haven't talked about this. I'm from West Virginia.
Really?
Moved to Portland 3 years ago, and I spent the first 18 years of my life in southern West Virginia, and the previous 10 to move into Portland in Shepherdstown, West Virginia, about 10 minutes away from Martinsburg, Eastern Panhandle. I've got posted up on MediaMonarchy.com right now under some of the Obama Sia news that, of course, hotels even within the Eastern Panhandle in West Virginia are all completely booked up as we're gearing up towards the inaugural
event. That's going to break the bank right there, that whole inaugural event. And, you know, the whole Obama thing, too, it's funny. You know, the trouble about the Obama situation is you're torn. And the reason why you're torn is because, on one hand, you like the guy. You're thinking, God, he's going to make a great president. On the other hand, you look at what he represents, and people think that just because you call him a socialist, you're being a pejorative bastard about that. But he is a freaking socialist. And not only that, but $700 billion going to corporations is socialism. Go ahead.
Well, that, if you and I again say this repeatedly on the show, if you just go to opensecrets.org, they track all the sort of campaign donations.
And where did all that secret money come from? It came from other countries. They want to level the playing field for a global financial new world order. And I'm not, and this isn't fringe new world order.
Not anymore.
Jesus is going to be killed. No, this is New World Order, financially backed and produced so that we can rally together around one central figure that's going to be ruling the world. Now, you know, you can look at it as the beast system, you can look at it as the Antichrist system, whatever you want to look at. I mean, I've made my peace and have decided who I think the Antichrist is, and I've said it in Rolling Stone. I was interviewed in Rolling Stone magazine, and they asked me, you know, who do you think it is? And I said, it's Prince William. But you know, everybody thinks it's Obama. It's not Obama. What Obama's doing is he's prepping us for this. He's being used as a tool by the old boys, like Zbigniew Brzezinski.
Absolutely.
And a lot of the Straussian neocons that are still lingering behind.
That are still on his team. And again, posted up at the top of the page right now, Obama and his Council on Foreign Relations crew. And it's a big, long, ugly list of folks like Zbigniew Brzezinski and Dennis Ross and Susan Rice and names that aren't so familiar, but the initials after their names, such as CFR or the Trilateral Commission or PNAC, it's the same cast of characters.
And they're putting in think tanks that sound a lot like, what is it, something for the New American Century. I can't remember what it was. It's Peace for the New American Century or something in the New American Century. It's these new think tanks that they're putting into play that aren't really new. They've got laws they want to enact, such as the Homegrown Terrorism Act. And a lot of people are saying, well, of course, Bush established that. No, that wasn't a Bush thing. That was a Democrat thing.
Exactly. It was originally called, Heartland Security.
Yeah, the Heartland Security thing.
Which actually, now that ties us back to Oklahoma City, which you have experience with OKC.
Twice with OKC. First, Ground Zero went on the air in April of 1995. 2 weeks later, Oklahoma City happened. Mm-hmm. They called it Ground Zero. People say, oh, how weird that you come out with your show and then Ground Zero happens. And then, many years down the road, Timothy McVeigh is about to be executed. Mm-hmm. I get information from a number of sources that say don't execute McVeigh, because if you do, it will alert terrorist sources within the United States, terrorist cells, rather, in the United States. Those terrorist cells would probably attack or activate on the United States. And so I go on the air and I bring on all these people to prove, to say, don't kill Timothy McVeigh. If you kill him, it's going to cause trouble. What happens? I get told, well, you're advocating a criminal staying alive, blah, and it's all a political bullshit banter. And I'm saying, no, I'm not advocating that any. I'm advocating truth. I'm advocating getting in there, getting the information, not killing the guy, because it's going to send a signal. He's a terrorist, just like any other suspicious brown person out there that could be a terrorist. So why the fuck are you doing this to me? Don't do this. They did. They said, well, you screwed us out of $40,000. It's all money. It's all politics. You're off the air.
Because we know that once the angry, grainy calls start to pour in,
right,
they just kind of snowball, and radio stations look at the bottom line and know which
and
way
they And they say, well, you're not that valuable to us. And I'm thinking, what do you mean I'm not valued to? I pulled in, $1.5 million for your goddamn company, and I'm not worth that to you, and you're going to fire me because I decided to make people feel uncomfortable? Uh-huh. That's my freaking job, is to make people feel uncomfortable. And, truth sometimes is sacrificed for money. We don't want, we don't want something like the truth to get in the way of a good story.
Absolutely.
And so they let me go, but immediately, people have always, they'll come to my aid. It's amazing. I get taken down, and then somebody always comes and says, Bring him back. And, when I hear people bitch and moan about their persecution complexes, when they say, we're being taken down because of the truth, we're being censored because of the truth, try not having a job for a year or 2 years. Try being told by syndicators that you're not worth the time because of your name, Ground Zero. Oh,
that's too much trouble.
Yeah, too much trouble, Ground Zero. So, you have to basically stay strong. You have to stick by your guns. And like I tell people, I'm going to be screaming and moaning and bitching about the lies and the crap that we're hearing until my dying day. Even when, a lot of listeners know that about a year ago to this week, I was diagnosed with double renal cell carcinoma. I had the choice of either dying or going through two painful operations. I chose the pain. And I remember my second operation. I was just right out of the hospital. And I was bored on morphine. And I said, what do I want to do? I want to do a show. And I was, morphine, when you're in pain, doesn't screw up your head. You're pretty damn coherent. The pain's gone. You feel like you can do anything. You feel like Godzilla. You can just take on anything. And I actually had two guys come pick me up. And they actually lifted me on the stage, and I did a full show. I had a hard time breathing, but I did a full show. And I just feel like that, it's important to be what I call the weatherman. If you see a storm coming in, you tell people that you don't tell people about the storm. It's your responsibility that people are hurt or damaged or harmed. And that's been my motivation all these years, is that if I see something, I talk about it, and I will continue to talk about it for as long. I mean, right now it's a matter of just getting it out there. Now it's a matter of surviving. I want to be able to reestablish my footing, and I want to get back on national radio again and do what I need to do, because people are still out there wanting to know, and they want to hear it. So,
absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And that's been my biggest fear, is we now, yay, the Democrats are in, evil George Bush, and it was all George Bush, and now all the well-meaning left can go back to sleep.
Well, yeah, and that's what's going to happen, because what we don't understand, and what I pointed out, and you pointed out too, which is awesome, that this whole operation, this whole Obama operation, is a psyop. It's a huge black operations ploy. It was to set up the country into victimhood, and then once you get people into victimhood, you can trap them into accepting anything that's getting handed to them.
After 8 years of George Bush,
right,
anything is going to look better.
Including state socialism.
Absolutely.
I've had more people tell me that, I'd always say, because, I was raised in a conservative state. I was a Boy Scout. I got my Eagle Award. I'm an Eagle Scout. I have three palms, and I had no life. I just, did my Eagle Scout. And when I got it done early, though, so I could take the time to have sex with chicks in high school. I got all my stuff done early so I could have sex later. But the truth is that, you get all that done, and you have that patriotism that you love your country for how it was, not how it is. And then, of course, political science was something I did in school. Journalism was something I did in school. Economics was something something I did in school. I learned all these things from, but I learned them not only from school, but I also went and I took other classes outside of school with different opinions so I could have a well-rounded idea of what's going on. Mm-hmm. I think Americans, first of all, they fall asleep in history class, so they let history repeat itself because we have an attention deficit democracy, which is something that I hate. Another thing that we have in this country is we have people who know nothing about economics. They know nothing about what the difference between capitalism and socialism and communism. They know nothing about Karl Marx. A lot of people do, and they don't want to talk about mm-hmm. it. But they don't know what facilitates or what is, you know, corporate fascism or mm-hmm. despotism or any of those things, because we don't have the little movies, the ones that, you know, jiggle and shake like they did back when I was a kid, telling you, beware of despotism.
This, exactly. You know, we both probably played that clip of like, is your system, yeah. where does it fall
where
on
does
the
it
scale?
Fall on the scale of despotism? And, yeah, I mean, we know about this because we were educated in this. People today don't give a damn. I mean, if they had Britney Spears do a thing on despotism, maybe, but now they don't. And mm-hmm. they won't talk about that. They won't talk about how your government can fall prey, or the government can, what is it? Just because a government says that they're this does not mean that they're this. And just because they're not wearing the Halloween costumes, mm-hmm. which I mean the khakis, the boots, and the swastikas, mm-hmm. does not mean mm-hmm. that they're not Nazis.
Somebody was telling me there's a poster or something that showed basically the Star Wars stormtroopers
right.
marching down the street, and there were tanks and APCs and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
And it said fascism. Do you really think it's going to be this obvious?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they hide behind their three-piece suits. I mean, what? They're Crips and Bloods fighting it out.
Absolutely.
In Washington, but they all have the same purpose, and that is to control. And regardless of whether or not you're a Democrat or Republican, it's the idea of control. It's now we're in a situation we are experiencing, and you can look this up if you don't believe me, we are experiencing Mussolini's idea of corporate fascism.
And that's, I notice, and again, people throw around a lot of words, but maybe don't know what's behind them. Pre-election, talking to somebody, you know, on a smoke break at work, and I'm trying to bring up questions about Obama.
Right.
It's like, I don't know, man, you know, Brzezinski, and this was actually an older guy, so he was yeah. totally familiar with Carter and Brzezinski and all that, and mm-hmm. he'd been through it the first time. Mm-hmm. He didn't really seem to have a problem with that and said, well, I like Brzezinski because he's a pragmatist, and McCain, I think, is just a fascist.
And he fires a great gun with his good buddy Osama bin Laden.
Exactly.
Which I, you know, and that's another thing, too, is that, you know, you see these pictures of people like Donald Rumsfeld shaking hands with Saddam Hussein, and you see Osama bin Laden firing weapons with Zbigniew Brzezinski, and you see Henry Kissinger sitting there sucking the dick of one guy and, mm-hmm. and fucking over someone else, and they're war criminals, and yet we are all going, yay for the war criminals.
Exactly.
And I hear this all the time. It's the lesser of two evils. And mm-hmm. I look at them and I say, mm-hmm. God, you're just so screwed.
Mm-hmm. And you're still voting
for an evil, you know, why don't you just vote for Satan? Satan's perfect.
Just write him in.
At least I know how Satan acts. At least I can reason with Satan. I can't reason with these other assholes, but I can reason with Satan. He likes me. He wants what's best for me. But he'll bend me over and fist me later on. There's nothing wrong with that, because, you know.
On a previous episode of your show, I listened to them. And again, folks, groundzeromedia.org, you can listen to Clyde Lewis in the Ground Zero Lounge every week. He does it live here in Portland, Oregon at Dante's on Monday night, but the podcast serves out there within the evening or the next afternoon.
Yeah, next day. Yeah.
And that's how I listen to it. Because of work, I'm not able to actually go to the event. But you do a show.
Mm-hmm.
You have projections and pictures and video
yeah,
and
yeah,
clips
yeah.
and microphones set up in the audience, so at any point anybody can get up and spout out their two cents. Generally well informed, but I know on a recent episode there was some girl who wasn't even on mic.
No.
Who was like, that's why we can change things.
I know. And they get irritated because they think I'm being cynical, or they think I'm being a doomsayer. But I look at people and I say, no, you know what? The best thing for you to do is to think for yourself and not think that one man can change mm-hmm. everything that's mm-hmm. been screwed over for the past 40 years. I mean,
Not eight.
No, in fact, that's what I'm going to be pointing out in my next show. I mean, prior to 9/11, we had people like Leo Strauss, and we had people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, and he's in now. He's Obama's, I mean, David Axelrod.
Absolutely.
And you look at people like David Axelrod who, what, consulted with the people who made the TV show West Wing, for Christ's sake. And so you're looking at this, what, Santos character. What was his name? God, who played? Jimmy Smits.
Exactly.
Was it Jimmy
Smits? Matthew Santos.
Matthew Santos, the Mexican candidate as opposed to the black candidate, who basically wins over the hearts of all these people against the
crusty old conservative,
Alan Alda.
From the Southwest.
Exactly. And it's like, am I seeing things? It's the same thing, except it's with a black candidate and a guy from Arizona who can barely, who looks like he's just a head stuck on a body that can't move.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, he's like a Star Trek character, for crying out loud.
I was talking about this with some folks at work, and again, most of the people that I work with know that, oh, I heard, yeah, you have a website and a show, but
right,
maybe don't really wrap their heads around it until one night they do actually go home and go to the site,
right,
and go, oh,
right,
okay, that's what he's doing. But I always try and, you know, throw out little seeds, little truth bombs, little seeds to plant in people's heads,
right,
whether it's, I work at a grocery store here in Portland,
okay,
so whether it's pointing out the Fanta on the rack and saying, hey, you know, and again, just a little aside, don't freak people out and go, dude,
right,
I know the truth, you know, because
right,
that wigs people out. Just go,
right,
hey, man, did you know that Fanta was the Nazi drink?
Yeah, it was
Coke,
the drink of the Nazis.
Coke couldn't make Coke anymore in Germany.
Right.
They had to sever their obvious ties.
Are you the guy that says, hey, you know that Bayer aspirin you're taking? It was the same company that gave us Zyklon B.
Bayer.
And who were the people that invested in Zyklon B? The Bushes. Prescott Bush was a big, big investor in Zyklon B.
Or IBM.
So you're talking about a president here whose grandfather was paying money to get the Jews gassed, okay? And not only that, but he also wanted to do a major coup with big business to kill FDR and get him out of office.
That's it.
And you
the
know...
The plot to overthrow FDR.
The plot to overthrow FDR was Prescott Bush's plot. People don't know this.
Mm-hmm.
They don't know this type of history where, yes, there were opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And the same names keep popping up. The Harrimans, the Bushes, the Walkers, the, you know, and the Fords.
Mm-hmm.
And all these... And isn't it funny how, like, we have foundations now called the Ford Foundation.
Absolutely.
Where Henry Ford was a Nazi, but yet we still have the Ford
Absolutely.
Foundation. And what does the Ford Foundation do? They fund shows like Sesame Street and all these other things, and you're like, wow, you know, you just can't go like maybe like two bacons away from finding a Nazi somewhere buried under your bed.
So we'll whip back around here for a second because we just went over a ton of things.
But you're even, what the hell is Brian talking about? He's out of his freaking mind.
Well, and I think hopefully the majority of the listeners are on board,
yeah,
and
so
are familiar.
I think they are, yeah.
And hopefully then maybe the other half are, you know, follow along, hit the links. Again, it's all more
right.
or less documented.
Yes, it
so
is.
When we're talking about the what I've been calling the coming criminal cabinet for Obama, again, we mentioned CFR and Trilateral Commission and Brookings and PNAC, but we also, of course, have Skull and Bones.
Yes.
So this from UPI, the Mooney Press.
Yeah.
University of Chicago economist Austin Goolsbee. You have to love that name.
Ghoul the Goolsbee guy.
Goolsbee, G-O-O-L-S-B-E-E, will be U.S. President-elect Barack Obama's choice to lead the White House economic team.
That is scary because I remember the name Goolsbee, and I said, I'm taking this name and I'm putting it in my Word file because Goolsbee, the word ghoul just stood out, and I'm thinking this guy is going to come up and he's going to be some creepy ass son of a bitch.
Mm-hmm.
He's going to have ties to Skull and Bones, and they're bringing the Skull and Bones dickheads, and then we look over and we see Brzezinski, who was involved with what the tech was it Technotronic era,
yeah, his book,
yeah, where he actually said people are going to be so easily duped by a dictatorship because we're going to use electronic means and human alchemy,
mm-hmm.
and causal engineering.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to use this magical way of getting people to love their slavery, which, of course, I think Huxley talked about.
You can get people to love their servitude.
Yeah, yeah, love their servitude. We'll just give them drugs. We'll give them whatever
mm-hmm.
they want. We'll
Soma.
Share the wealth.
Soma and
then feelings. People will love us. People love their slavery. It's like people don't read enough, I don't think. They just don't read because they're able to be just taken like dupes into their slaughter. And I said one time at my show, I said, Arbeit macht frei. One guy goes, what the hell does that mean? And I go, get out of my fucking show if you don't know what that means.
I don't,
you know, work will make you free. And it was on every concentration camp. And it should be posted on every gated community and every place in this. I mean, I had a dream once. I dreamt, and this is the truth, I had a dream that I was in the airport, And as I was in the airport, I there were TSA was going through my bags, and they were checking things out. And I looked up, and hanging on the wall was a swastika, a big red flag with the white and the whole thing. And the scary part wasn't that the swastika was on the wall hanging. The scary part was that no one gave a shit. They didn't care, because anything's better than Bush.
Mm-hmm.
Anything's better. I mean, what? I use the phrase Chinese democracy in one of my shows, meaning the Chinese model for mm-hmm. capitalism is what they're debating on right now with the G8 mm-hmm. and the G20 and all this other stuff.
Which brings us to the media memes and predictive programming. What's that vaunted, much-hyped, 10-year-long album that just came out?
Yeah, it's called Chinese Democracy.
Guns N' Roses.
Guns N' Roses. In fact, one of my producers called me up after I had done a show, and I used the phrase Chinese Democracy. And she called up and she said, "What are you doing using the phrase Chinese democracy? What the hell are you talking about? There's no democracy in China." I'm like going, "Sweetheart, listen, just trust me. Okay, trust me on this." And then all of a sudden I get a MySpace alert that Chinese Democracy has finally been released by Guns N' Roses. And I'm thinking, there's a meme that's going to trigger a lot of thoughts because, of course, China and Russia now want to renounce the dollar. And
absolutely.
The Chinese, quote, democracy, if you will, or the capitalism or the mm-hmm. or the way they do it, the New Deal that they do, mm-hmm. they want to bring to us. And now they're saying, no, we don't want your New Deal. We want our own deal with our own New World Order. Gordon Brown wants to have the New World Order.
He says that every other day.
I know. He uses that phrase every other day. And now, I don't know if you know this, but Prince Charles has come forward and said, well, now that we're doing all this wonderful stuff with the New World Order, all this other stuff, you know, I own oneworld.com, and I own 75% of the food in this world, and blah, 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 blah. Why don't I start speaking out more as king? I know the monarchy doesn't say crap, but now I want to start speaking about it. And I'm thinking, good job there, Prince Charles. You're just preparing the way for your kids so he can rule the world and bring us all happiness and peace through monarchy and ecumenical crap.
That's what I was trying to grasp for the phrase there, yeah. But of course from Network,
yeah, the ecumenical
holding company.
Holding company, exactly.
There are no nations, there are no states.
No.
There's only Unocal and Exxon. And
exactly. And in fact, I've been wanting so badly to review that Ned Beatty speech when he's sitting there talking with Howard Beale.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have not seen the movie Network, you see it. I mean, this was prior to Fox News. This was 76, 77.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, hell, I was watching Star Wars and going to KISS concerts back then, but that movie really affected me, and I think that maybe that's one of the reasons why I'm doing what I'm doing today is because of that film.
Absolutely.
It was an amazing film.
One for me, I grew up with a conservative upbringing. There was a long time. Couldn't go to movies, couldn't buy music, do any of that.
No.
Of course, I always tried to sneak around and found ways to listen and see things, but years later, becoming a huge film buff, and I'm music, film, theater, I love it all. My favorite films are a lot of times, like we just said, Pump Up the Volume, or Talk Radio, or Network, Natural Born Killers, things like that.
I tell people the problem with music today and films today, they're not satanic enough. And I mean that tongue-in-cheek, people, because I don't worship the devil, but truth is, back when we were kids, everything was the devil. Everything.
And the 70s are definitely a golden era of film.
Exactly.
And I think one that we haven't really seen in a long time, it's, you know, because you think of whether it's Clockwork Orange or Exorcist or Rosemary's Baby or
warning us of the Network. Baby that's going to be born that's going to be the Antichrist. I mean, we need more Antichrist stories in the world to make us remind us that, hey, you know, there's some asshole out there that just wants to fuck with you a little bit more, and he's going to fuck with you until you accept the mark of the beast. And, I mean, that stuff, those memes and those mythologies, I mean, to quote Leo Strauss, are reality. But, yeah, they make up things like Osama bin Laden and mm-hmm. Saddam Hussein.
Yeah, or Emmanuel Goldstein.
Emmanuel Goldstein from 1984, exactly. 2 minutes of hate.
So, sometimes here on the show, I like to glance at Google News.
Yeah.
Because there have been several times where I'm so into doing what I've already sort of mapped out for the show that then I get home and see that some huge news story broke. I was like, I could have just talked about that.
Oh.
So I glance at Google News sometimes. And, of course, when a watched pot never boils, that's never anything fascinating. But we can glance right now and see that Democrats oust longtime leader of House panel, that's Waxman, out, who did sometimes seemingly do good investigative
work. Oh, yeah. Well, he was the one that would... I can't believe that. They got rid of him?
And I...
Oh, wow. And he was saying some things about... Did you see that thing where... I guess it was... What company was it? Well, the automakers. they were all sitting there, and he, along with some other guys, said, how many people here flew in on private jets, and how many people flew coach? Those who flew in on coach, raise your hand. And none of them raised their hand. Then they said, let the record show that none of these guys flew in on coach. They all flew in their private jets. Mm-hmm. And it just, why doesn't this enrage people?
So the story right below it on Google News right now is lawmakers collide over ultimatum to automakers. So this could tie in with the whole Senate and the automaker and the bailout. And again, it's all fiat zeros and ones.
Well, if you look at things like, for example, I remember Elliot Spitzer. I did a thing about Elliot Spitzer. And, you know, Spitzer is a guy, of course, that was the Democratic favorite, 70% approval rating in New York. And what happens is that he writes an article in the Washington Post basically criticizing George Bush's predatory lending that would bring us into the position we are now with the economy. His friends say, hey, this is political death for you. You better watch your ass. Somebody's going to kick it. Sure enough, somebody's using the FISA methods to monitor phone calls of him making deals with prostitutes to go and have sex with them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, let's face it, prostitution is a misdemeanor. It's not something, but yet we made it into this huge thing. He had to resign, all this other stuff. And then they didn't even press charges on him after all was said and done.
Exactly.
So basically what they did is they embarrassed him because he decided to push the Bush administration and say, listen, you know, you're going to put us in this position where we're all going to get run over. And I pointed out in one of my shows that isn't it funny how when the $700 billion was proposed and Americans were totally against it, we have McCain suspending his campaign.
In a very dramatic move.
And then Obama is saying, well, I'm not going to go to Washington. And then Bush says, you're coming to Washington. He comes to Washington. Pelosi, McCain, and him go into this room. They have a talk with Bush. And they come out and they're like going, okay, we're all for it now.
Let's go.
And they compromise their morality. Mm-hmm. And people who voted for these people compromise their morality. And people don't see it that way. They're too caught up in the hype and the glory of their candidate.
Their team.
And it doesn't. And one of the things I got into arguments with people, I think Sarah Palin is hot.
At some point, I was going to go, now let's discuss your perhaps unhealthy infatuation with Sarah Palin.
I said, look, if you don't think Sarah Palin's hot, you're gay. I mean, you know, God damn, she's hot. She's like the bank teller fantasy you've always wanted. You know, she takes off the glasses, lets the hair down, we see her boobs. It's amazing. Hot for teacher shit, right. In fact, I created the Dancing Palins. It was one of those things. It was my fantasy. But the idea here, though, is that there were so many people that couldn't put their politics aside for one second that if you said, I think Sarah Palin's hot, they look at you, I think she's ugly, I think she's stupid, I'm going, don't you see what's going on here? You know, you may not like her politics, but you let that put you in this mindset that she's completely horrific and bloody. No, I mean, come on. She just got offered to do a porn, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and if Larry Flint decides that he wants to have Lisa Lee imitate her in Nayland Palin, I think there are a lot of men out there that are probably, you know, jerking off right now to her image in this movie. So I'm not the only guy out there that, you know, gets a little bit of a chub when I see her speak. And that's the thing, is that it makes me mad that people, they can't see beyond how the mentality is shaped from the media. Mm-hmm. And
it is a red and circus dog and pony.
Sure.
Show.
And I put it out to people too. You know, going, what about the Katie Couric interview? She looked like a total idiot. Have you ever seen Katie Couric interview Obama and then she interviews McCain? When she's interviewing Obama, I swear to God, her panties get flooded. Okay? They are wet to the core when she's interviewing Obama. And then she's interviewing McCain and all of a sudden, man, she's got like a big padlock there in those panties and no one.
The chastity belt.
Yeah, she's got the belt hooked up, but she's all like sour and cynical and everything. She did the same thing with Sarah Palin. Mm-hmm.
Those are the impressions that we'll take on.
Sure, because we have nobody else to look at and say, you know, first there is what is, and then there is what is interpreted. Americans are too into interpreting. They're not into what is, okay? And what is that it's a dog and pony show. What is that they use all kinds of tricks to get you to fall into their spell. What is that it's human alchemy. What is that if you you see the propaganda for what it is, you can realize that "yes, we can" was a phrase that Adolf Hitler used when he wanted to recruit people to join him in his Nazi quest.
I was amazed in recently just listening and editing clips and doing all that, of listening through, I don't think I've listened to the entire thing, of Obama's victory speech.
Right.
And there's a point, and I'm sure they've been doing this all along, but I'd never heard it. There's a point where he said, you know, when they said, you know, that we can't, da 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 da, we can now say, yes, we can. And the audience immediately, yes, we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My jaw hit the...
Think about this, too. The swastika is a sun symbol, right? What does Obama use? He uses a sun symbol.
A sun symbol.
You have the "yes, we can" thing that Hitler used as well. It was another one of those mantras that Hitler used. You've got, here's another piece of trivia, the Victory Tower in Berlin. Who was the last person to speak at the tower before Obama?
I believe his name was Adolf Aloysius Hitler.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, you know, people go, well, bad choice. No, choice for a reason.
There
you
is
know.
The symbology. And the memes and the genealogy is replete throughout all of it.
The destroying angel sitting on top of the tower, the angel that looked over Europe thinking with that disparaging look that Hitler thought, you're going to be in the eyesight of Metatron or Shikana or whatever you want to call it. And even when Bush got up during his inauguration and said, don't you think an angel rides in the whirlwind and directs this storm? That's Masonic speak for, yes, the whirlwind is the whirlwind of death, the death ward whirlwind that's going to clean house. I mean, I knew that we were going to war the minute he said that.
I'd forgotten about that.
I knew. I go, oh, God, we're going to have a war. And so when Obama gets up there and stands at the Freedom Tower with another angel sitting on top of the Freedom Tower, or the Victory Tower, rather, and knowing that Hitler spoke there before he did, it's another indication that, yes, we are going to go to war. And I can tell you this, too. The Cold War is going to start up again with people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, who's a Cold War relic, who believes that the Russians are evil and the Chinese are evil. Mm-hmm. Pakistan and Iran are evil. It's going to happen.
We're going to see playing those smaller countries. So basically, and I've said this before on the show, somebody like Brzezinski says to the regular sort of mainline neocon types, why are you guys always getting bogged down in the Middle East? You guys are always getting stuck there. It's this thing you have.
Our biggest problem is Russia and China.
We always know that it's about Russia and China. So let's, instead of getting bogged down in those countries, let's play them all against each other.
Exactly.
In an effort to encircle Russia.
I think we just plotted out the next 4 years.
I believe so.
I think that, I think that I wouldn't be surprised if between now and Inauguration Day that Osama bin Laden is found dead or has been dead since 2001, like Benazir Bhutto had said, and then ended up hitting her head on that car and dying. dumbass story. She hit her head.
Exactly.
No, after she was shot 18 times, she hit her head.
But so we were talking there for a second about Obama and his big speeches and the symbology, and then, of course, in Denver at the DNC, which is fraught with all of the things that come with Denver, whether it's the Denver International Airport or the New World Airport,
exactly.
And perhaps deep underground military bases and the murals and all that stuff there.
And they put him between two pillars, which makes him the Seeing Eye Stone, which is an ancient ritual that even 9/11 had a big stone. I mean, the towers had a big stone in the middle. It's symbology of the Holy of Holies. So they put Obama in the Holy of Holies with the two towers, and people, you know, they don't register it consciously.
Nope.
But subconsciously, it's a religious symbology that we're all going, oh, he looks like God there. How nice. We're going to vote in our next Messiah.
And even on our local city, quote-unquote, alternative papers here, how many covers in the last year have had Obama at some, either like some hot, like Baywatch style, coming out of the water in a sort of like Jesus sex pose.
Oh, yeah.
Halos. And even then, after the election when he won, of course, both the Mercury and the Willamette Week both had these amazing painted portraits of him.
Another thing that they used, too, when they were doing the Obama acceptance speeches, they showed a lot the eagle and the idea that the eagle is based on the phoenix. You see this rising phoenix. And then what was interesting about that, too, is remember what song was sung called The Rising by Bruce Springsteen. The rising of what? The rising of the phoenix. The city from the ashes rises up. The utopian ideal rises up, and we have this whole new socialist empire.
And the rising still was Bruce Springsteen's post 9/11 rah-rah song, I believe.
Exactly.
They probably played it at the Super Bowl or something.
Sure.
Post 9/11.
Right.
But have you, I'm sure you probably have, looked into the work of Webster Tarpley?
Yes.
Who's basically...
In fact, Webster Tarpley was who I quoted many times, I think in my last show that I did. There was a lot of Webster Tarpley stuff that I did about the economy.
Okay.
So, because Tarpley was, you know, he knew. He did a lot of stuff on the G20 and the, and the meetings and stuff, so I had to get that information out there in time. So, yeah, it was Webster Tarpley that I quoted. Yeah.
I've mostly, you know, I followed his work since his, you know, the book Synthetic Terror.
Right.
9/11, you know, made in the USA. And his two newest books, Obama the Postmodern Coup and Barack H. Obama the Unauthorized Biography, sort of a play on the title of his, the Unauthorized Biography of George H.W. Bush, his legendary Bush expose that I think has been online for some, you know, 15, 16 years as a long-running online book.
Exactly, right.
So he has basically detailed is that we are seeing a postmodern coup, a fascist, people-powered, foundation-funded, Soros think tank, Brzezinski, Trilateral Commission coup.
Yes.
And we're seeing this amazing army of people who, again, if you punch someone in the face for 8 years and then say, hey, well, how about I just noogie you on the head? That seems pretty good.
Yeah.
So after being punched in the face by George Bush for 8 years, people will take a noogie on the head, even if they do have the reservation of, well, I was going for, you know, the lesser of two evils, which, of course, you know, I got from people a lot. When I had to say at some point, no, I don't actually support Obama.
Right. And that was a hard thing for me, too, was to, you know, I went after Obama from the get-go because no one else would. That was one of the things was, why do you go after Obama? He's obviously a good candidate. And I'm like going, yeah, he's a great candidate, but will he be a great president? And, yeah, I have no problem with Obama and his attitude and his sense of humor and and his, you know, what he does. But the problem I am having, though, is the utter ignorance and the rejection of the idea that Obama can't do anything bad or anything evil or make any mistakes or even, you know, implement some sort of a new world order. You know, and that's where I look at Bush and say it was a big setup. You know, you bring people into victimhood, you mark them with the victimhood victimhood aura or the victimhood feeling, and immediately some savior is going to come in and they're going to try to make you feel good about the fact that you're still a victim. You know,
and it seems it's just another case of the sort of problem, reaction, solution.
Well, see, the irony of the whole thing is we have a black man basically being our slave master now.
Which you, I believe, just mentioned on the two episodes ago.
Yeah, two or three episodes ago. I've been really, in fact, what's really funny is I did the Serious Indication, the Serious Intentions show. Basically, I saw something on the Second Sun website, and then I took it from there to some other levels. That was very inspiring. But what's really interesting is that you start seeing these patterns of thought and these patterns of voice and patterns of words and, you know, references to dogs. And then, of course, the Sirius Star was just
hijacked
by pirates.
Or Obama says, I'm a mutt.
Yeah, I'm
a
mutt.
Or we're talking about what dog they're going to get.
Exactly.
Their family.
What's really hilarious is that, you know, I got your email or my MySpace and I looked at it and you were talking about what was the name of the boat that was
and
hijacked.
And I gave you the link to
and
it.
I linked on it and I went, oh, shit! And here it was 2 in the morning, 3 in the morning. So what do? I call my girlfriend. And I call her. I text her. I go, are you awake? She goes, I'm awake now. And I go, guess what the name of this boat is? She didn't know what the hell I was talking about. And then finally she was up and she calls me. She goes, oh, this is so good. She's like doing all the dot connecting. And
that's
I'm like,
another dog.
That's why I love you. You're doing the dot connecting. Another dog connection.
So that was a recent episode of the Ground Zero Lounge.
Yeah.
And again, folks, Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, and all the links and all the pertinent links and connections are going to be there for you in the show notes of this episode.
Right.
So we've been talking for just about an hour right now, and we've been discussing a little bit of everything. So
all over the page we've been today. So
we'll take a little break, and listen to a little bit of music. We're going to listen to a song called Electronic Behavior Control System.
Oh, yes. Is that EBN?
That's EBN. Yes. Excellent.
Okay, good.
And I always kind of reference that record's always been a big influence on me.
It's great.
We'll be right back. concentration, manipulation, articulation, participate in your own manipulation.
Yes.
I feel great.
You can too.
That really feels good.
Emergency Broadcast Network. That song is called Electronic Behavior Control System. Going back to 95, the amazing and influential album Telecommunication Breakdown, when I bought it right before I moved away to college in 1995, it came with a 3.5-inch floppy.
Yes.
Because that was the point at sort of new technology with albums were happening.
And when I lived in Utah and I listened to EBN, and I was listening to Negative Land, EBN, all this stuff. I had to get it at a special store because they wouldn't sell it in mainstream places, and I don't know how I got into these experimental groups that I think maybe that they basically warped our heads. Groups like Snog, I don't know if you know Snog, S-N-O-G-G. They're another band that you may want to get into and check out because they got a lot of great stuff, too. And I don't know.
We could talk about music.
talk about music that's influenced us as people who speak the weird stuff.
And again, that was, I think, something that, like we were talking off mic, and again, my listeners have probably heard my tales. Working at WSHC 89.7 FM in Shepherdstown, West Virginia for 10 plus years,
mm-hmm.
I was basically in my small town. I was the media guy.
Right.
I was the one who people would say, you know, hey, who's the guy that's in the thing? Or what's this? Like, I was... Or what song was that I heard on the radio?
Right.
I was kind of the question guy.
You're the guy that they hold the phone up to and say, what's this?
And 9 times out of 10, I can
at least
get them on the right path. So what happened in town and in my life, really, was post 9/11. On the day of 9/11, I didn't have any suspicions. I hadn't been turned on to the idea of false flag terrorism.
Right.
My biggest sadness and fear, other than just the entire event, was I basically knew, oh, shit, it's on now.
Well, with 9/11, with me, it was not knowing factually. It was knowing internally that this was going to happen. If you recall, what movie was playing in theaters when 9/11 happened?
I believe it was a film called The Two Towers, wasn't it?
No.
Oh,
no.
Did that come a little later?
That happened later. No, the movie that was playing in the theaters when 9/11 happened was Pearl Harbor.
Oh.
An attack on the United States where people believe that the president knew beforehand before it happened. And so what they were trying to do is they were trying to reprogram the nation into thinking about the attack on the United States, an unprovoked attack of the United States, and where we were sitting ducks and that we had no other alternative but to declare war on a nation like Japan.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you're looking at what may be going on in the future, you take a look at the films that are being produced 3-4 years, or maybe this was like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Pearl Harbor came into theaters, and you know, people are sitting there watching the America being attacked on the movie screen, and then they go home and they watch TV, and they're going, it was like a movie. We saw two planes going to the towers.
Yep.
Of course it was like a movie, because there were several movies and several TV shows. In fact, 6 weeks prior, there was a show called Pilot, and I interviewed Dean Hagland, who was in
The Lone Gunman.
Lone Gunman, where, the plot of the entire television show 6 weeks before 9/11 was the idea of a plane being remotely controlled and slamming into the World Trade Center.
Mm-hmm. By rogue elements within the military-industrial complex and the shadow government, hijacking a plane with remote control to crash into the World Trade Center to start the clash of civilizations.
And A Long Kiss Goodnight was another film.
Actually, in the intro, I don't know if you caught it. I play a clip from, and actually, folks out there, if you've never known what that little clip was in the intro of my show, is you're telling me that they're going to fake some terrorist thing just to scare some money out of Congress?
Right.
And Samuel
then
Jackson.
The line afterwards is, and we'll blame it on the Middle Eastern terrorists, of course.
Ah.
I mean, the whole plot was given to you in the movie. And there were a lot of movies that gave the hints or the clues. I mean, like in The Matrix, you look at his passport was September 11th, 2001, where it was supposed to expire. That was Neo's passport. You take a look at... oh my God! There's just so many movies that I could go through my head. Super Mario Brothers.
And I've never seen that one. I've seen some screen grabs.
Even in Super Mario Brothers, there's an attack on the World Trade Center. Mm-hmm. That the World Trade Center is destroyed.
The Spider-Man trailer that was yanked.
Yeah, because it shows,
I believe it was a helicopter, but basically a helicopter getting stuck in between the web of the trade towers, which again gives that imagery of what folks like Jake Kotze and others would talk about.
Right.
Stargate.
Well, I mean, what we need to think about, with those things, we need to ask ourselves, are memes triggered, or are they something that are within us and that we manifest our own reality? That's the thing that I've always questioned, because I know in my life that I've manifested my own reality in a lot of respects. I say things, or I produce things, and like you pointed out to me with my last show about the Serious Intentions, things happen. Certain things end up in the news, like the Sirius Star being hijacked. This has happened to me many times.
Mm-hmm.
9/11 for me, 2 weeks prior, I wrote an article called the Abaddon Nexus.
Hmm.
And what I wrote was, is I felt as though that my friends were under attack, that I was under attack spiritually, emotionally, what have you. I talked about a city being destroyed, like Sodom and Gomorrah. All these references and what have you. And what had happened is that after 9/11 went down, I got a phone call from some guy from Indiana who said he was an FBI agent. And he said that he was going to come and meet with me because he said that he wanted to know why I wrote an article called The Abaddon Nexus. And I said, well, I wrote it because I felt like I was emotionally being attacked. I mean, one of my friends wanted to commit suicide. I just broke up with my girlfriend. It was really an ugly situation. I was feeling picked on, persecuted, and paranoid. And he says, well, that's not the point. He says, the point is that you wrote an article 2 weeks before 9/11 about a city being destroyed called The Abaddon Nexus, and the word Abaddon is mentioned in the Bible, Revelation chapter 9, verse 11. And I was floored, and I went to the Bunny Ranch. I escaped to the Bunny Ranch, guest of Jimmy Flint.
The reason I've heard of that place before is back during the primaries, they were huge fans and supporters of Ron Paul.
Right, right.
And they had posters of him up.
Dennis Hoff,
And they said if you came in as a Ron Paul supporter, I think they were doing like a two-for-one deal.
That's always nice there at the Bunny Ranch. But, yeah, I actually, and what was really hilarious is that I was watching a an episode of Supernatural on the CW.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the guys, they're angels or something. They do their homework. And they had actually were told by some demon or some angel that it was the end of the world, that Armageddon was coming. And one of the guys says, good, we get to go to the Bunny Ranch and hang out. I'm thinking, where the hell did you come up with that idea? Maybe they listen to my show. I mean, you'd be surprised who listens to Ground Zero. I mean, I get letters and people who I didn't even think were listening or were fans of Ground Zero. In fact, there's a company called Zero Point Radio. United Stations is going to be broadcasting old Ground Zero shows starting this Saturday night. It's zeropointradio.com. You can go there and hear the shows. Go there now so you can hear when these shows are old shows. But one of the people that they're working with, who apparently likes my show, is Alice Cooper, and I just was really kind of
awesome.
I was really flattered by that.
Huh.
And so, you know,
and that's been the amazing thing now with the web.
Yeah.
Now, definitely, you and I would probably both say, well, yeah, I'd rather be on an FM station right now.
Right.
Things just maybe haven't worked out that way, but
no, and you know, and I think my web presence is pretty overextended. I mean, I think, and this is the thing that, you know, I'm gonna state here for the record. I was a pioneer with doing, I think Ground Zero was the first paranormal show that was ever broadcast with real audio, and we actually had a thing called Newsy Ground Zero that we produced out of Earth Broadcasting was the name of the company. And we had 6,000 people on our download list, and all it was, I was sending out an email with audio, something that came out before podcasts.
Similarly, when I was doing my last music show, and this would have been 99, 2000, 2001, I was doing a sort of electronic media mashup kind of show.
Sure.
And I was, same thing. We had a little bit of server space. I would post the episodes there and send out an email.
Right.
Because, again, there was no subscription RSS, XML,
right. And we could compress them to the point where, you know, we went from 14.4 to 28.8, and we had to keep thinking of processing times. We were experimenting with the medium.
Mm-hmm.
But we were doing podcasts, and we were sending them out on emails,
yep.
But we were using real audio. We weren't using MP3 technology. Okay. So, I mean, being the first, I believe, and we were also, KCNR, the station I worked for, was the first radio station that actually took Art Bell and broadcast him on the internet. He was getting phone calls from Hawaii and Japan, and he goes, "Well, where are you calling me from? Filipino girl, where are you calling me from?" It was because we were broadcasting him on the internet at KCNR in Salt Lake City.
And some of the folks that have picked up Media Monarchy, again, I didn't know who these guys were.
Yeah.
They found the show somehow, and thanks to, like I said, KBFR in Boulder and Ground Zero Radio, appropriately enough, out of Atlanta, wrote me and said, hey, you are back on the FM. We're running your show.
That Atlanta always seems to, you know, I go to Atlanta, I do things there in Atlanta, I come back, and I hear that Atlanta has Ground Zero Radio, which, of course, is copyrighted my name. Thank you very much.
I've found both those things very interesting, that Atlantis is running my show, and Boulder, of course, right near Denver and Colorado and that whole center.
So, yeah, I mean, I love the fact that, you know, it's popping up everywhere, that ideas are popping up everywhere. In fact, Media Monarchy, the good thing about Media Monarchy, I wrote an article about the black helicopters over Portland, and I published it in several independent areas. But Media Monarchy keeps popping up whenever I type in Clyde Lewis, Media Monarchy, number 3 or 2.
Nice. I wonder sometimes...
I Google myself because I'm full of myself, but you do that kind of thing.
I wonder sometimes if, this is my own thought, I am amazed sometimes at the Google hits that I get.
Yeah.
On searches that people run, it's like, I'm the second result on that. I wonder sometimes if, because I actually run Media Monarchy off of Blogspot, Google's blogger program.
Yeah.
So it's actually mediamonarchy.blogspot.com.
I just think it was amazing.
If Google gives preference to their own products
Could be. I wonder that.
But
I just think it's amazing, though, that, yeah, I typed in the thing about the black helicopters, and Media Monarchy came up, and my name came up with Media Monarchy, and
awesome.
And I'm like going, wow, you know, you published my thing, and this guy's getting more hits than I have.
I feel a similar thing, I think, actually happens with Alex Ansari and outside the box. If somebody sometimes Googles outside the box, number 177.
Media Monarchy comes up.
And it's like, damn, I'm sorry, brother.
That's okay.
But in a way, it's like, hey, I consistently post your shows and give nothing but attention
to
you.
And that's great, because it just, I think that we need to, one of the biggest frustrations I have about the internet media right now is that we always see the same names coming up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we're limiting ourselves by, and nothing against Alex Jones, mm-hmm. nothing against, people like that. But, I mean, Freeman Frye, remarkable guy out of Austin, Texas. Had him on the Ground Zero Lounge mm-hmm. a couple of weeks ago. Met him at Esso Zone. We hit it off. We're like brothers with different ideas. We have the same ideas, but we have different ways of presenting those mm-hmm. ideas. And, I don't see people sending out Freeman stuff. They need to send out more Freeman stuff.
Yep.
They need to send out more Ground Zero stuff, actually. Because, I've written a lot of stuff and produced a lot of stuff, and I just don't understand why... we have to keep hearing, Alex Jones and his people, because they're not, just because Alex Jones is the name and he's mm-hmm. on Coast to Coast AM and all this other, he did Ground Zero long before he did Coast to Coast AM. And he did mm-hmm. Jeff Rentz long before he did. I mean, here's another name, Jeff Rentz. Mm-hmm. There's a guy who, he and I have had our horns lock a lot, but I'll tell you something about Jeff Rentz. Jeff Rentz is the guy if you want to get just... non-stop mm-hmm. stuff that you can, And another guy is the guy that does WhatReallyHappened.com.
Yeah, Michael Rivero.
Michael Rivero, who is amazing.
I've been fortunate enough a couple times. And, I'll track and see how my hits are doing.
Right.
And we Google yourself, look at your hits and all those sorts of things.
Right.
There are times I'll look at my sort of graph and it's off the charts.
Right.
Something happened that
right.
I was getting 2,000 hits mm-hmm. a day as opposed to over a few days.
Yeah.
And it was WhatReallyHappened.com.
I would say WhatReallyHappened.com is a good source for people to go to. I would say Rents, of course, always a good source to go to. Red Ice Creations is a fantastic. I don't know how I found Red Ice Creations. Red Ice Creations is an amazing website,
and they have such great style.
Oh yeah,
they have that not of America kind of style.
Yeah.
They have that amazing.
Yes.
Swedish.
Yeah, I guess it is Swedish. I don't know what it is, but they've got a lot of great stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I just I think that these newcomers should get equal time. Like I said, I love Alex Jones, mm-hmm. but I just get tired of every time I go into my MySpace, somebody sends out a bulletin, Jack Blood and Alex Jones. Uh-huh. I'm like going, just uh-huh. shut up, uh-huh. Alex. I know Alex is there, but there are other people out there that are just as good and just as relevant.
I think, and I post tons of Alex Jones stuff, but I do, like we're saying, try and throw right. attention to Alex Ansari and Outside the Box, or there's a guy named Doug Owen.
Yeah, Doug Owen's awesome.
BlacklistedNews.com.
Yeah, exactly.
And RogueGovernment.com.
Right,
and a lot of the other, again, sort of the younger crowd, if you
will. Because I get sometimes when I'm doing my shows, and people, I've got fans all over the world, I can do my shows and somebody like has to put in a comment like in a Google video that I've done or something. Alex, this guy's good, but Alex Jones has the truth. I'm like going, shove it up your ass. Uh-huh. I mean, I know Alex Jones,
mm-hmm.
and Alex Jones is just like everybody else. Why don't you give me credit for where my credit is?
There's no one. Yeah, no one person or outlet has a monopoly on truth. Just like. There's no, or at least I don't believe, that there's a sort of unified field conspiracy theory that it's one exact... I basically think of them as gangsters. Or multi-generational serial killers.
Well, the scary part is that I get a little paranoid about when we have a one... what made me paranoid about the one authority idea about the paranormal, about the conspiracy theories and stuff, is when George Norrie took over Coast to Coast AM... I remember I was offered to be on Coast to Coast AM as a host when Art Bell left. And one of the things I said to them was I don't want to be Art Bell's replacement. I want to be the replacement of Art Bell's replacement. And they said, what do you mean? I said, well, I know that if I was to, I could be Mick Jagger, mm-hmm. but I'm certainly not going to be a Beatle.
You can't follow that.
Yeah, I can't be Mick Jagger and the Beatles. I can't do that. So... if you put me in that position, people are going to go, he sucks, no matter how good I was, and I'd walk around with a big chip on my shoulder saying, I suck.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't do that, and I didn't want to do that. And sure enough, they put Mike Siegel there, who was and Hilly Rose and all these other people that tried to fill in for Bell when Bell left. Completely, nobody liked them. They didn't like the it was hard to get used to. They bring in George Norrie, and George Norrie is like grandpa telling every ghost story you can do, and nice guy, Norrie. But I just have a feeling, though, that, people don't know that there's something else out there besides George Norrie, mm-hmm. and that, while you know, it's nice to hear Grandpa talk of these stories all the time. There are also the evil twin brothers and the evil twin sisters out there that are saying the same thing, but they're saying it in a different way. In fact, a way that's probably that they have more freedom to say what they want to say because they don't have big broadcast networks like Premiere and others telling them, nope, can't talk about that.
Absolutely.
Can't talk about 9/11. Can't talk about
that. Absolutely.
And I think that's one of the reasons why Alex Jones is so big is because Alex Jones is independent. He's in Austin, Texas, and he's given us for the longest time some credible things to think about. So but we need to also sit and look at other people too, I think.
And absolutely.
I don't want and share the wealth. MediaMonarchy.com, you know, Ground Zero Media, IdeoCast, you know, those shows.
And Jones, of course, even says itself, it's like, this isn't much like even Obama would say, it's not about me, it's about you picking it up and doing it yourself.
But people get lazy.
Exactly. Yeah. And so are we going to see that again? Are we going to see people get lazy? I know I've maybe, I don't think I lost friends, but I definitely, post-Obama election, I started to push a lot of buttons of all these friends and people who I know and love and are near and dear to me, that it just kind of churns my stomach to watch them get on board this bandwagon, and it's just another Super Bowl or Oscars to them, and once it's over, yay, our team won, and they go back to bed.
Well, I have this attitude, and this is the attitude. No matter who you vote for, you're voting for the enemy. And you know, and that's the way I feel about government. It's like, no matter who you vote for, you're voting for the adversary, and you need to understand that. All the time that I was attacking George Bush, George W. Bush, I was attacking him because he was the man in charge, and you expect more from your president. I wasn't attacking him because I'm anti-Bush or anti-Republican. I was attacking him because I was trying to keep the king honest. That's what the press does, okay? And so when I see Obama coming into the picture, when I see Ron Paul, I even criticized Ron Paul on a few things. And people say, oh, screw you. You know, who the hell are you? You know, I can't take you serious now. Well, you know, fuck off. You know, you can't take me seriously because I'm trying to be an objective journalist. I know I talk about aliens. I talk about Bigfoot. And I talk about, you know, ghosts and shit like that. But you know what? So does everybody else, okay? And you know, and if I'm trying to be an objective journalist and I'm trying to give you a well-rounded story, don't hate me because I'm telling you that maybe, you know, Barack Obama, as much as we love him, is leaning towards being a Marxist. You know, don't think that I'm attacking the Democrat ticket because of that. What I'm doing is I'm attacking the ignorance of the American people, allowing themselves to be beguiled into this pit of vipers. They're just going to attack them again and bend them over and screw them. And people don't People always say, well, you know, nobody likes an asshole. Well, no, they don't. But you know what? I don't want to be the guy who's responsible for another asshole. I once made the comment that I always think that elections are like taking Uncle Sam and binding his arms behind his back and putting a blindfold on him. And we march him down into this area where we sit him on a chair and we pin a target to his chest, and we go to Republicans and we go to Democrats and we hand them all rifles and we give them a bullet, and on that bullet it says vote. You put the bullet in the chamber, you cock back, and you fire at Uncle Sam. And I said, this time I'm not going to put my bullet in that target. And I mean that. I mean, I said, the reason why I'm not voting and the reason why I'm not participating in it anymore is because in the year 2000, my candidate did not win the election. And I said, and I didn't vote for Al Gore. My candidate was George W. Bush. He did not win that election. He stole that election. And I was angry that my candidate stole the election, and I wanted the recounts, and I wanted the investigations, and I wanted the grand juries, and I wanted that son of a bitch put in jail. I wanted that guy to go to trial. I wanted that guy to stand trial for the crimes against humanity that he's committed. Okay? I'm talking about the candidate that I was behind, the man that I met at the Empire Hotel in New York in the year 2000, the one I shook hands with and I ate dinner with in New York. I met George W. Bush. I was impressed with him. I wanted to vote for him. But when I saw what he did, when I saw how he lost the election, and when I saw how he stole the election, I said, my candidate did not win. I can't trust any of them now. And even Al Gore, the way he acted afterwards, I cannot trust the decisions of my leaders anymore, because I know now, and everybody said, well, how did you just figure this one out? I know now that no election is an honest election. And even the situation with Barack Obama, he won because of our victimhood. He won because people are in crisis with their own minds. They're not happy with their lives, and they cannot see the, I guess you, the sweet talk and the bedroom talk mm-hmm. that gets him, get you all into bed with him.
Mm-hmm.
And then even when it's over with, he'll roll over and go to sleep and fart in your general direction and everything else that you do when you're done. And I just think that people need to, you know, get it over with now and realize, like you say, you know, we brought in these you know, trilateralists and these CFR members and these Illuminists, these Luciferian, you know, Luminists and people who made friends with enemies and hang out with, you know, marauding bastards. Mm-hmm. And yet, that's okay, because that's America.
Yep.
Not America that I grew up with. I mean, I'd like to go back to when I was a kid and didn't know and believe that Ronald Reagan was grandpa who was uh-huh. going to save the planet. Uh-huh.
And even then, who was behind the scenes?
George H.W. Bush.
Exactly.
People always say, oh, I hated Ronald Reagan as a president. You know, I tell them, I say, let's correct history here uh-huh. for just a second. One of the greatest presidents of my era was Ronald Wilson Reagan. Ronald Wilson Reagan, in the first 6 months, was a great president. He was like how Obama's going to feel. But then one day, he walked out of a hotel, shots were fired, and he hit the deck. And it's just like that old saying that Bill Hicks said. He said, you know, what does a president do when he becomes president? He walks into the smoke-filled room, they bring down the screen, and they show the shooting of JFK from another area, probably the grassy knoll, and then they bring the screen back up again, and they say, do you have any questions? And the president says, what's my agenda?
Exactly.
That's what happened with Reagan. Reagan was... The attempted assassination on Ronald Reagan was another Bushism.
Well, and of course, there was a drill going on.
Mm-hmm.
Operation Nine Lives, a drill about presidential succession.
Yeah.
So whether it's a drill like that, or a drill like hijacked commercial jets crashing into buildings on 9/11,
or trains being blown up in
London on 7/7,
yeah,
or
exactly.
drills of foot and mouth being released that, oh, whoops, it does actually come out
exactly.
of Porton Down in these government labs.
Right, right. And I just think that people, you know, they don't want to believe that, they want to believe in the mythologies. They want to believe in
and
that.
And that's even the root right there, is that they want to believe.
Blind faith.
I don't care what you believe. You can believe that
right.
the tooth fairy brought you a dollar after you put a tooth mm-hmm. under your pillow.
Blind faith gives opportunity for men in power to orchestrate deceit. And Americans, I can't believe they've allowed themselves to continue to be blind. But everybody wakes up one day. Something happens to them where they awaken. For me, it was Princess Diana.
Mm-hmm.
For you, it was JFK.
For me, it was more 9/11.
Or more 9/11.
And actually, jumping back to what I was saying about always being the media guy mm-hmm. back in Shepherdstown.
Right.
Post 9/11, it was something I started to investigate and research myself.
Right.
But it wasn't really cool to talk about 9/11 truth
right.
in 2002 and 3. I kept it to myself.
Yeah, I had a lot of people when 9/11 happened. It was, I had a friend call me that morning, and he said, it's the end of the world, Clyde, and you predicted it. And I said, oh my God, and I watched it, and I didn't have time to shower or anything else. I had partied the night before, so there I was, stinking to all heaven, B.O., downtown, interviewing people about what's going on. People didn't know, didn't care, and the attitude was, in fact, this one woman said, I wish they'd open the mall so I can get some shoes. She said, I'm from Israel, and she says, when the bombs go off in Israel, we still shop. And I said, oh, I didn't realize. And so the thing that's most important is that in America, we have terrorist events. We don't have terrorist attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Every day is survival in America, whether you call it terrorism, bombs going off, school shootings, people being shot, shopping malls, that kind of thing. But we're waiting for the next terror event. It's not about terrorist attacks.
We've been waiting for the other shoe to drop.
Right. And that's the thing, is that what event do we have to have in order for us to get it? Yes, we're in terrorist. That's just it. It was too big of a deal.
Absolutely.
9/11 was too big of a deal to not be an inside job.
So regular... real terror events are generally pretty small and maybe usually flubbed up.
Right. A terrorist attack would be a bus exploding in downtown Portland or a bus exploding in downtown New York. That's a terrorist attack. 9/11 was a terrorist event, or it was an event that shook America.
Mm-hmm.
And it would take a lot of money to pull that off. And I bet you, and I know that money that was funneled in from other governments brought 9/11. together, and it happened like that. The inside job was not inside America. It was inside the entire global planning of where we're at now.
And that's, again, the sort of straw man or limited hangout sort of arguments that are made against, you know, 9/11 research.
Sure.
They're too stupid. You think Bush pulled this off?
No, he didn't.
I've never thought or said that.
People say that to me. Oh, you thought George Bush did it? Nope, never said that. George Bush didn't do it at all. He had nothing to do with 9/11.
So where was George Bush on September 10th? And the second part to that question is, well, if he wasn't in D.C., who was in the White House the evening of September 10th?
Mm-hmm.
George H.W. Bush
was sleeping in the White House the night before
9/11.
He was.
George and his brother Jeb were chilling in Florida.
Right.
And the whole operation is what you were saying, that basically he stole it. He did not win it.
No.
All along, and you could tell it was a put-up job.
Sure.
That whatever obstacles came up, whether it was losing to McCain in one of their early decisive primaries,
right,
against all political history and the way things usually roll in primaries, the money should have flown to McCain. This is, again, 2000 primaries we're talking about. It went to George Bush, inexplicably.
Mm-hmm.
Things come up, he gets over it. A contested election in Florida, he somehow gets through it, and his brother saves the day. And there's, of course, the video of, oh, no, we're not going to lose.
The most amazing thing of all is I heard the statement, I made it on my show, is that a lot of people don't realize that the Republicans, more Republicans voted in Obama than Democrats. And it was because of the fact that they didn't want to see McCain become president of the United States.
Well, I thought he was just another sort of dead duck ringer.
He was too liberal.
Like a dole to put up. He's the ringer that our setup winner is going to knock easily out for the TKO.
And the biggest lie of all was that voting in McCain would have been 4 more years of Bush. That's a lie, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because McCain is far more liberal, and there were a lot of Republicans, like people like Ann Coulter and Rush Limbaugh and several others who said, you know, we want you to go in and we want you to vote for Hillary Clinton. We want you to get her in there because it would be a lot better to have Hillary Clinton in there than have a formidable opponent than McCain.
Exactly. And my parents have always voted that way. They do the sort of strategic game of, well, in the primary, I'll vote Democrat for the weakest person so we can set up a weak person that the GOP can knock down.
Yeah. And so when you're looking at that, I guess you could say horse-ass logic, you find that, yes, elections can't be tampered with. They can be guided in certain directions. The Electoral College has a final say. And why the hell are you giving them a blank check to just bend you over and fuck you again?
Mm-hmm.
What I think a vote is, it's consent. It's like saying, I'm giving you a check with nothing on that line that says pay to the order of. You say who it goes to, and you say how much. And then when they turn around and say, well, you gave me this blank check.
We're cashing it.
And that's exactly what's going to happen with Barack Obama. You gave him that blank check. He's going to be cashing it. And when he does, you're going to have to do as he says, or you're going to have to do as the way the world goes. Where the world's going to is going into a state socialist new world order, a financial new world order that Gordon Brown talks about, a financial new world order that
Goldman Sachs, Paulson. Goldman Sachs, the biggest donor to Obama.
Right, and Obama is going to be the one that's going to be selected to instigate this, and this is the change that we voted for. People, I always say, change is a Rorschach test. You project what that change is going to be. Obviously, it's going to be better than George Bush, but I can tell you right now, even in the transitionary period, I was really watching how people reacted to Obama being elected president. In fact, we were at a gathering, and people were more getting drunk, more worried about getting drunk and basically saying, well, it better be good. I heard more attitudes, well, this better be a good choice. It went from he will be the good choice to this better be a good choice. And I think that Americans, now that they've done it and they've shot their wad, I think now they're thinking about okay, what's next? You know, do I get to be?
Will they respect themselves in the morning?
Sure.
So we've gone over a bit of the, again, what I call the coming criminal cabinet, whether it's dual Israeli citizen Rahm Emanuel stabbing, you know, the table with knives and saying dead, dead, dead to his political enemies, mailing them a fish like a literal gangster, a dead fish as a sort of death threat.
Yep.
And whether it's, of course, again, glance at Google News right now, Clinton set to be nominated Secretary of State. And the article below that is Florida teen live streams his suicide online.
Mm-hmm.
What do we see coming down the road? What do you see in the next, not only, well, especially 4 years, because not only will that be the first administration, that will also culminate with 2012.
Osama bin Laden will be... We'll get an announcement that Osama bin Laden's dead. He died. Our intelligence failed us. We knew we had an idea that he died, but they're going to put that to bed. They have to.
So they also have to basically roll his... Like, we have to see that corpse, I think, for there to be any kind of...
But we won't. I don't think we will.
Mm.
I don't think they can. If they do, I'll be surprised. But I think that what they'll do... I mean, Zbigniew Brzezinski created Osama bin Laden. He's going to have to kill him. The Straussians created the myth of Osama bin Laden. They're going to have to kill him. So Osama bin Laden's the first thing to go. We'll find a reason to hate Pakistan for keeping that secret from us. And Musharraf and all these others are going to say, you know, you sons of bitches, you knew all along that he was dead. Why didn't you say anything? This is an act of whatever. You've been harboring these Al-Qaeda bastards for all this time. Maybe that'll be the reason to move into Pakistan. We will go to war with Pakistan. We will go to war with Iran. Iran just basically has enough natural uranium now to make a nuke, so that may bring us into war with them.
Or our... friends, Israel will kick it off.
Sure, that could happen too. And definitely the Cold War will be back on, because people like Zbigniew Brzezinski, again, is a Cold War relic, who doesn't like the Russians and doesn't like China, and we will resent China for their wonderful Chinese democracy. There's mm-hmm. that phrase again. And we'll eventually, though, the eventuality is that we will have to go that way. I believe that the Chinese model has always been the idea for the United States.
Who helped set up their one-child policy when he was a UN envoy? Oh, that was Poppy Bush.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those types of things have been thrown around and bantered about for the longest time. But yeah, I think that once everything's said and done, after heated words, maybe even a few bombs be thrown, maybe even some armies moving in or what have you, we will be seeing the Chinese model for socialism, or the Chinese model for bailout, which is actually the New Deal,
mm-hmm.
Be brought to power. I think that Russia will once again become a bad guy in the future. The Georgia-Russia thing was just the thing to kick things off.
It also,
yeah, 888 was the starting point for Christians to see the Gog and Magog wars erupt. I'm thinking that they're going to see that. And we're also going to see some very interesting things happening with the Dome of the Rock.
I was going to mention that earlier,
yeah.
Because the Dome of the Rock, does that also symbolize, it's the Al-Aqsa
Mosque.
Does that tie into the Benben Stone?
It does, because that is what the thing represents, because you have the octagon. If you look above it, you see the octagon, you see the stone in the middle, which is the dome. But we need to remember who was the family that remodeled and rebuilt the Dome of the Rock. The Bin Laden family.
Ah.
The construction Bin Laden family. So it's all about
Saudi, Saudi Bin Laden.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it all has those ties. And if they destroy that mosque, that's a signal to most of the Christian world that we're heading towards some sort of a renewal, a new world, if you will. And
now,
that's what they're pushing for by 2012, is the whole new world, the new epoch, the new aeon, the new time. That's what they're looking. I mean, that's what 2012 is going to be. It's not going to be the end of the world. No. It's going to be the end of the Gregorian-Julian age. It's going to be the end of the Piscean age. It's going to be the Aquarian age that they've all been talking about.
We're singing about.
It's going to be new leaders, new dedicatory prayers, new dedicatory symbolism and ritual for the Freedom Tower in New York, to the new temple where the Dome of the Rock sits, to rebuilding the world and to abolish the old world, building the new world on the ashes and corpses of the old world, which is basically the Phoenix ideas. So, I mean, those memes are there, and that's what the future is going to hold for us. It's not the end of the world, but the beginning of a new aeon. I've said this before. I've done presentations about this, and I think a lot of people seem to lean towards that because, you know, the Earth's not going anywhere.
No.
Unless we're hit by an asteroid. But I don't see any in the future, but it can happen right now. It hasn't, so.
And so we have all the chatter from whether it's Powell or Albright or Biden or Brzezinski or even the president of the CFR saying he's going to be tested. There's going to be coups and genocide and terrorism
assassination attempts.
Exactly. And will we see these events that we've been talking about, whether we go to war with Pakistan and we start to encircle Russia and we start to do these things again? Do these things need their kickstart? Do they need their Pearl Harbor?
They've already had them.
Gulf of Tonkin?
I don't think we need another 9/11 event. If a 9/11 event happens, we really don't need one. What we need is we need the implication of one, or we need to twist the story to make it work.
Mm-hmm.
We have enough language of fear going on that just one push verbally, or one push that even appears to be that way. I mean, the whole idea behind now, the perfect example of this, assassination of Barack Obama. Those words are in the public zeitgeist right now. And that is very powerful. So powerful, in fact, that I don't think Barack Obama is being protected so much that I think he's getting all kinds of security, and they have to hold on to him. He's the foretold reincarnated Akhenaten. He's the one that's going to revive and put together all that we need. If Obama gets knocked off, it's going to be the worst thing to happen to this country.
So if we glance real quick at Danger Room up on Wired.com, secret directed energy technology protecting the president, ? And they go into FOIA requests and devices and beams and...
Sure.
And there it is.
And how many now with hologram technology, how many times have we seen Obama be a hologram as well?
Well, when you mentioned Prince Charles earlier, I was going to say, oh, the hologram Prince Charles?
Mm-hmm.
Now, we had just a few weeks ago, and I did a long episode, we just had the, what was it? It was the 70th anniversary of the most amazing media psyop I think ever pulled off, and that's Orson Welles'
The War of the Worlds. Exactly.
Do you believe, I definitely believe there is, and the technology is there to project
sure.
holograms into the sky.
Yes.
To beam sound into your skull.
Right.
They've done it with billboards in mm-hmm. Times Square.
Exactly.
Could they pull off a sort of Project Bluebeam, fake sort of rapture, fake biblical event, project Jesus over Kansas,
right.
project Allah over the Middle
did
East,
you hear about, did you hear about the pink cloud that was seen over England?
No.
You ought to Google that. There was a pink
recently.
Cloud. Recently. Pink cloud syndrome in England. No one knew what it was. It dissipated. It was a very frightening thing. But people said that it looked like some sort of a pink angel or a pink god in the sky or some sort of a... People saw different things in the cloud. And if you remember on 9/11 when the towers were hit, you saw demons in the clouds and you saw all this other stuff. It won't take something sophisticated like a full-on Jesus Christ or a full-on Allah or a full-on Elijah or whatever to appear in the sky to get people to pay attention. It only needs to appear to be something mysterious. Hell, flares trigger people's minds to think mm-hmm. UFOs are landing. one of the things about, there's a report called the Report from Iron Mountain, and everything that they talked about from the economy being taken out to new world governments being taken out to create a military police force in order to protect us, the last thing that they say is some sort of a perceived threat from outer space. And I made the joke once, I said, what happened the last time we had a black president? We had an asteroid hit the planet. And that was in
Independence
Deep
or,
Impact
or Deep Impact.
Morgan Freeman was president.
And again, yeah. It brings us back to the media memes, whether it's
revelation of the method, the predictive programming is what that is. I mean, you
Jericho.
Yes,
the yeah. country gets hit by nukes, and of course, throughout the series, we find out it was actually a false flag event from within inside the military industrial complex.
How many times has New York been attacked in the movie?
Mm-hmm.
Many. New York finally gets attacked. Mm-hmm. It's done. The ritual's over.
Mm-hmm.
The revelation of the method's over. The predictive programming, the response.
Mm-hmm.
And then now, how many times have we heard about plagues, zombies? How many times have we heard about
Andromeda Strain,
quarantines.
Right so, at your door. All these films, all these television shows.
So the next threat will be biological, obviously.
Absolutely.
And possible dirty nuke or nuke. Those are the things that they're programming us to basically be ready for. Also, they program us to be ready for armies walking the streets, like in some of the movies you've seen, too, about
Enemy
the future.
Of the state Enemy of the state. Or the siege, or rather.
Yeah. You see those movies where they're soldiers walking the streets. Yeah.
Those are films made by guys... Like, if you ever check out Tony Scott's films and his brother Ridley Scott, Tony Scott has made movies like Enemy of the State, Top Gun, always mm-hmm. completely hand in glove with the military.
Sure.
And he's there ahead of time, always putting these things out there. There's some gratuitous 9/11 bit in Enemy of the State when Will Smith, I think, looks at his watch or something and they're about to swoop. Mm-hmm. It's 9/11 on his watch.
Well, when they open up the computer on Independence Day before the aliens attack New York, what time is it? It's 9/11. 9/11 is counting down. 9/11, and then right after 9 minutes and 11 seconds, you see that beam come down, takes out the Chrysler Building, you see the World Trade Center come down.
Mm-hmm. Or The Simpsons. Simpsons.
Or The Simpsons, you know, we got to go get the car out of the World Trade Center, and Lisa holds up holds up the 9 with a big 11 on there.
Yep.
And, of course, Matt Groening, of course, is a master mason. He's a 33-degree mason.
I did not know that.
He
is from Portland, Oregon.
Yes, he is. Yes. Huh. And I know his illustrators, too. I know Bill Morrison and several other people who work for them. And, you know, and I don't know if they're inserting these things on purpose, but it most certainly is interesting to watch.
Absolutely.
How we see these things transpire in TV shows. We can always go back and say, well, didn't that happen in a TV show? Mm-hmm. Like the Santos thing with the West Wing.
Uh-huh. The whole last season of West Wing pretty much mirrored
the Obama
election.
Yeah, and David Axelrod. And they're saying, well, it was because they were listening to Obama's handlers. Maybe it was the other way around, but who knows? Mm-hmm. We never know.
Mm-hmm.
But you can all look this up. I'm not making it up. The whole last season of West Wing was this election we're having now.
So, if there doesn't have to be a sort of 9-11, and it won't be, and I've said that again repeatedly, it's like it ain't going to be planes into buildings again.
No, well,
I believe it's going to be, if it's not the worst, like a bio release or assassination, it's going to be empty ATMs. It's going to be a financial crash.
It's going to be the sense of dread.
The sense of dread.
I think the next terrorist attack will not be terror. It'll be dread. Dread stays with you a lot longer than terror does.
Can we launch the war on dread?
Now you'll have the war on dread. I think the dread is the next thing. I mean, if you walk around thinking you're going to die.
Oh, my God.
Or if you walk around thinking that the next pill you take, like the Tylenol scares or whatever, or the food you eat at the salad bar is going to make you...
Spinach is going to poison you. Tylenol is going to kill you.
Exactly.
Your Pepsi has a syringe in it.
Exactly. And those are the things that bring dread. And I mean, you can't eat beef. You can't eat the things you want to eat. You can't do the things you used to do. Water tastes funny now. There's something that may kill you. Take pills, Zoloft, all these, you know, take your antidepressants, take your Viagra, I was just saying last night at the other night at the Ground Zero Lounge, I say, there's a reason why you have to take Zoloft and Viagra and all these things, is because we are under stress.
We're under, I get it from Michael Tesarian, all of these things can be basically called a war on consciousness.
Yes.
On all levels. So whether it's our food or our schools or our water or our media or our elections or our homes or our...
No matter what we eat, drink, sleep, or fuck, they're going to regulate. Think about this.
George Harrison sang all about it.
Well, it's like you take a look at the reality. I saw a commercial, and it was the most amazing commercial. This young man's knocking on the door. He says, can I have Rebecca's hand in marriage? Yes. Knock on the door. Can I have Rebecca's hand in marriage? Yes. He's like going door to door asking people if he can have Rebecca's hand in marriage. And it says, how would you like to ask 260 million people for permission to be married?
Mm.
And that sends it home. It's like, okay, so homosexuals can't have mates because we don't give them permission to.
Mm-hmm.
We decide what marriage is.
Yeah.
We decide what this is. So, and what's going to happen? Like I say, what's going to happen if they say you can't eat this food or you can't do this or you can't do that because we're rationing it?
Codex Alimentarius.
Yeah, Codex Alimentarius or private property. Or these are things you have to consider with this new state socialism. Private property no longer is a factor. The Supreme Court no longer is a factor. We abolish the Supreme Court. Because the state makes the rules. It's not red state. It's not blue state. It's the state versus you. And it will always be this way as long as we do not figure out how, which we probably won't be able to do now, get attorney generals, four or five of them together, plan a lawsuit to do a constitutional revision, go in, take a look at the Constitution, see what needs to be applied and what needs to be taken out, and then stick by it. And if it doesn't stay stuck by, we have a revolution.
Mm-hmm.
And that means not guns, not it means lawyers and money, and those are the things that they answer to.
Those are the things that they ultimately
know. Look, you're going to take a gun to Washington, and you're going to try and do a revolution with a group of a million people. You know what they're going to say to you? They're going to say, so, how big's your nuclear warhead?
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't drop a nuke on people that are willing to rebel, because that's what nukes are for. They're not only to keep other people in check, but to keep your country in check. Mm-hmm. So,
but I think anymore, as far as just real estate goes, I don't think that we'll necessarily see any kind of devastating nuke early on, because you can't live in that area then.
No.
But if you have a, you know, race-specific bio release,
mm-hmm.
like Cheney and mm-hmm. the PNAC-ers
let's eliminate the undesirable brown people first, and then we'll come in and take over.
So, we're just about out of time, and I think we've just about hit a little bit of everything under the sun, whether it's JFK, 9/11, War of the Worlds, Obama, 2012.
I think we basically, I think we've basically come up with the world solutions, and I think that this will be the one that people will go back to, and they'll go,
this has it all.
They figured it out. We have it all figured out. That's why we're here.
And that's ultimately, and again, as we've talked about, sort of like the production of it and having fun doing radio,
right.
That's in a way where it's like, you would go insane dealing with all this as much as I think that we probably do if you didn't have a way to sort of step back and just like, this is all kind of amazing and ridiculous, and we'll kind of have to poke fun at some of them. That's, you know, excellent stand-up comedians or The Onion and things like that are a nice satiric kind of release.
Surgeon's axiom is 95% of everything's bullshit, so, you know, if we're all spouting off bullshit, it's something that, you know, you can take with a grain of salt, or you can make fertilizer out of it and have it grow things and grow into new ideas and new things, and like I say, you know, you can count the seeds in a single apple, but you can't count the seeds... I mean, you can't count the apples from a single seed. So use the fertilizer to plant your plants, and let's hope we grow in knowledge and ideas and keep it going, because that's what we're here for.
Absolutely. Yeah. Clyde, thanks a lot, man.
Hey, you betcha.
Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, every Monday night here in Portland at Dante's Inferno,
right.
Appropriately enough. But like I do, I get the podcast later from ideocast.com. And again, folks, all the pertinent links will be linked up in the
reminder
show.
Ground Zero Total Recall starts this weekend
the
on
classics.
ZeroPointRadio.com. The classic
right.
Ground Zero shows. We're kicking it off with the Challenger disaster, actually. That's the first show that they broadcast. So they're going to go in line.
So back
in sequence.
Jumping back to the 86 episode?
Actually,
or?
No. Is it the Challenger or the Discovery? Columbia. It's a Columbia disaster. We're going to do the Columbia. We're going to start with the Columbia disaster. What an appropriate Columbia. Yeah. The end of Columbia. Columbia's lost. Yeah.
All right. So, again, man, thank you very much.
You bet.
I appreciate it. And one of these days I'll get out of work and I will come see Ground Zero Lounge live.
This week we're doing a thing called Bloating in the Deadpool about Osama bin Laden. I think you really like it. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Next show.
All right, man. Thanks a lot.
You bet. Thank you.
So, I, again, immensely appreciate Clyde Lewis, groundzeromedia.org, coming in for the full 2 hours here on this 100th episode of MediaMonarchy.com, if you can believe it. I've been doing this show now for 2 years on the Portland Radio Authority, a little less than that on RevereRadioNetwork.com, and it's slowly, over the last 2 years, branched out to a lot of different places. Again, KBFR, Ground Zero, I thank and love you guys very much, and I appreciate you guys sharing the show with everyone. Now, Clyde, you'll dig this. This has become one of the segments that people really enjoy of the show, where I basically use a stat counter on your website, statcounter.com. It keeps track of how many hits you have. When you install that code on your page, it gives you the back end to be able to check out where your traffic is coming from. So if you're running a business, you can see what's working and what's not, and you can tailor your business to that. When I started to look at it, it started to scare the hell out of me that the visits I was getting to my website. So I thought, rather than kind of get weirded out about it and not talk about it, I'd just put it right back out there and post the list of the most interesting hits with, you know, their ISPs and all that and what they Googled and how they landed on the page. And I keep a little log for you each week. So here's the latest list of creepy customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com in the past week. We had Southwest Airlines out of Fort Worth, Texas. We had the U.S. Department of State in D.C. They Googled Egyptian 311 bombings, Mohammed the Egyptian. We had the Department of Veteran Affairs hit me up for my link on blacklistednews.com. We had the Navy Network Information Center. They were reading about 9/11. KSM, New Clues, Steel Cross, NIST, and WTC7, an older link on Media Monarchy. We had the Occidental College out of Los Angeles hit me up for my link on whatreallyhappened.com about the mysterious death of 9/11 eyewitness Barry Jennings. We had the New Seasons Market store support, Google Media Monarchy, right out here in Portland, Oregon. We had Marshall Bauer out of Plano, Texas, a consulting firm, Googled Obama, fascist, Blackwater. We had, amazingly enough, the Guggenheim Museum hit me out of New York City from a link on WideEyeCinema.com. We had the University of Medicine and Dentistry out of New Jersey, Hit me up from the link on notanotherconspiracy.com, Hudson River Healthcare, Allstate Insurance, U.S. House of Representatives, the DOD Network Information Center. We're reading about Chinese officials predicting 9/11 attacks again on MediaMonarchy.com. We had the Army.mil out of Fort Benning, my friends, home of the School of the Americas, which should scare everyone. They were reading about officers blamed for Tillman case errors. Again, the House of Rep out of Manassas, Virginia. We had Best Buy Incorporated out of Minneapolis, Google, Fanta, and the Holocaust, which we just mentioned in this episode. We had the NIH, National Institutes of Health, out of Arlington, reading about another look at Jonestown, as well was the United States Naval Academy out of Annapolis, reading about another look at Jonestown. Interesting sidebar right now is we're about to see Portland, Oregon's own Gus Van Sant release Milk, about Harvey Milk. And of course, we've gone over Milk and George Moscone and Dan White and the Twinkie defense. What's interesting and what ties into that in that era in San Francisco is Jim Jones and the life and death of the People's Temple. So you should check that out. We also had Columbia University out of New York. Hit me up again from What Really Happened. Carlson Hospitality out of Omaha Googled Operation Angel Thunder 2008. Swedish Armed Forces Googled helicopter fast roping training. NBC Universal hit me up from Blacklisted News. NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, they were reading about Barry Jennings. We had Maxim Magazine Google scientist at Plum Island. Of course, Plum Island, the folks that brought you Lyme disease. Texas A&M University, Xerox Corporation, Merrill Lynch Googled CNBC Plunge Protection Team Exposed, which we didn't have time to get to this week, but there's a clip of CNBC and a guest on there basically saying, yeah, the Plunge Protection Team alters the markets, and the guests are just, that's, what? It's you got to check it, and we'll get to it probably on the B-side here next week. We had the Uniform Services University of Health Sciences at med.navy.mil out of Burke, Virginia. Another look at Jonestown. There's a meme there, my friends. FEMA out of Springfield, Missouri, Googled National Level Exercise Program 2009. They were reading about their own drill they're going to be running with Northrop Grumman early next year. Drug Enforcement Administration, yet again, and finally, Hewlett-Packard, hitting me up for my link on sourcewatch.org on the entry about our good friends, Blackwater Worldwide. So that is quite the creepy list of customers coming to MediaMonarchy.com. And again, I've never gave the impression that, oh my, they're watching me. The Navy, they're watching me. Or what, fucking Best Buy's watching me. No, I think for the most part, these are average people at work, at computers, Googling things they've heard about. So again, just because I get hits from the U.S. House of Representatives or the DOT doesn't mean that I'm on their memos to be checked. Now, definitely some of them, I think, come from bookmarked links, because again, on StatCounter, it'll tell you how they got there. So it's interesting when you see the DOD on your page and no referring link listed to it, which basically means they bookmarked the page. But again, I'm not scared. I'm not doing anything illegal. I'm taking open source intelligence and open source information and putting it out there in a new context for you on MediaMonarchy.com. And I will continue to do it as long as you help me out. So, my friends, I love you and I thank you. And again, a huge thanks to Clyde Lewis. Please check out groundzeromedia.org. And I'll be back here next week for episode 101 of Media Monarchy. So, like I tell you every week, but now more than ever, my friends, like my man Webster Tarpley says, get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.